We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. Wake people that you're interested in what's going on, or if you get the weekly notifications about what's going on, you've seen there's an internal assembly happening this Tuesday where we will report on what happened at the founding assembly, and we'll talk about what we're going to be doing about this development downtown south, where we're going to, in exchange for the city granting rezoning, we're also going to ask for benefits for the downstream people, for water management, for affordable housing, those kinds of things. If you'd like to participate, that'll be this Tuesday, November 24th, 7:30. Okay, taking a hit and snapping back. I had two similar conversations this week. Maybe you could relate. Something along these lines. You know, it feels like we've lost something this year. We've lost something precious. Maybe it's been over the last few years. It feels like this loss might be permanent. And what we've lost is the ability to be friends with those who hold different political views, different social views. It feels like we can't go to church together anymore. It feels like we can't play cards in the neighborhood like we used to. Well, if that's similar, if you have had similar conversations, it's a pretty widespread thing. And going through this loss and the grief that goes with the loss, it's really easy to get focused on blaming the other side. And we can make a really good case for why we would do that. But among other things that doesn't do, it doesn't change the interior sense of loss. That doesn't change the underlying sadness. We can cover it over with anger and blame for a little while. But that sadness that always accompanies loss, it's in there. And this week we got the holidays coming up. And for many, the holidays just highlight what we've lost. Places that we used to connect. Even when the virus is over, those places may not be there anymore. So this has been an extra strength season of troubles. And for many, it does feel that we won't be going back. Now, that is a story that we tell ourselves, and there are mitigating factors to those thoughts. We talk a lot about brain biases. Times of trouble always feel forever. We know that it's not true, but when we are in the newborn baby crying through the night time, it feels, oh my God, it's going to last forever. When we're in the unemployment time, or when we are in the relational conflict time, it feels, oh my God, it's going to last forever. It's not. But when we're in it, and when we're in this social unraveling time, it feels like it's going to be forever. It won't be, but that doesn't change that it feels like it will. Now, I say this a lot. If we stand back and if we see the things in a historical context, this is what historical change looks like. What is unraveling needs to unravel for us to emerge on the other side, but that doesn't change what it feels like in moments of pain and hardship. Well, that basic idea, that informs the spiritual tools that become especially important for us living in this time as we are. This is a getting hit season, and the hits tend to keep on coming. So we need to become skilled in the ancient tools that help us take these hits and be able to snap back. Well, last week we talked about working with our brain wiring. We have these deep instincts in times of trouble for fight, flight, or freeze. But we also, we saw, have another evolutionary adaptation, or we could call it a virtue, a hardwired feature, or we could call it the truer self or the inner light. It's a feature inside of us. In each of us, during times of trouble, beside the fight, flight, and flee, freeze, there is also a deep impulse to connect more deeply. We called it the tend and befriend instinct. That is also in there. However, That impulse, it is not what is being drawn out of most people these days by our tribal leaders. No. They are doubling down on triggering our fight response, God, if you just watch the cable news channels after 7 p.m., they are doing everything they can to keep us enraged. It is so toxic when you watch that shit. It's horrible. And our commercial leaders, they're doubling down on our flight response to help us get away from our troubles. Here's a shiny distraction. Here, watch this. Or here, buy that. And our tend and befriend instinct, it tends to go wanting. Now, it probably evolved to help us protect our offspring. We've got brain structures for times of trouble that help us help one another activate courage and activate selflessness and activate hopefulness. Because if we do that, the group survives better, and the babies then survive better, and we pass our genes along. But you don't have to look very far to see that times of trouble don't always trigger the tend and befriend response. Often, as we have seen, they trigger the exclude and the circle the wagons and the shut out and the attack and the demonized responses. So our brain's infrastructure, it has both instincts, and they're both in there, all queued up and ready to go. And which will we access? Our brains give us a choice. There are biochemical systems for both, for attacking and excluding, for tending and befriending. They're both in there. Both release dopamine. Both activate the reward system. Both increase motivation. And both tend to tamp down fear. 90% of Americans are bemoaning right now that we are so focused on the demonize, fear, hate feature in our brains, and we are not as focused on the tend and befriend feature, the invite in feature. Now, we're bemoaning it, but we're not ready yet to shun our tribal leaders who are peddling this tribe. We're still giving them our eyeballs each night. We're still giving them our mind space, but we're beginning to get sick of it, and maybe that's a start. Now, after that, there's plenty to do. After we get sick of it, there's plenty to do to repair what's being broken right in front of us. But getting sick of it, that's a start. So, thinking of this from the spiritual tradition, how do we get a head start on it? How do we learn to more naturally activate the tend and befriend dopamine reward system? And how do we suppress the demonize and hate dopamine reward system? Well, it turns out ancient wisdom has long been telling us exactly how we do that. The ancient text that I mentioned during our guided meditation, thankfulness, gratitude, see the whole picture, the true and the beautiful as well as the false and the ugly. If we train our minds, even when our leaders threaten democracy in order to gain some political foothold, even then, with all the work that that puts before us to heal what is being broken right now, even then, the tradition tells us, to insist of ourselves that we find something to appreciate, that we find something to value and to prize and to cherish. It's in there and it's out there. And we can access that part of our brain, but it's a process, and consequently it usually starts small, very small. If you're here in Raleigh, you know that it's been a mild autumn. And so for an unusually long time, we've been sleeping with the windows open. Well, earlier this week when it hit that cold snap, I forgot to close them. And then it got to freezing. And our windows get sticky and they're a little hard to get up and down. So in the night, I didn't want to get up, so I just covered my head. Now, the second night, I forgot again. But before I fell asleep this time, I closed the window and I turned on the heat. And oh my God, the world became such a beautiful place. I so appreciated warmth. Fell into a deep, dreamless sleep. It was beautiful. And our president is withholding access to those departments that are going to be distributing vaccinations. That is also going on. And it's very easy to only see the one and not even notice the other. It is very easy to miss beauty. You know, a paved road is a wonderful thing. If you've had to live without it. A warm meal is a wonderful thing when we haven't been acclimated to take it for granted. Someone who loves us, even if that someone wants to express that love well and isn't, but they want to, There is a beauty in that. There is beauty around us. It's always there if we have eyes to see it. Cicero. He was a significant thought leader in the late days of the Roman Republic. He was writing and he was speaking as Rome was devolving from a budding version of democracy into a dictatorship. We went from the Roman Republic to the Roman Empire. And he was trying to hold together a lofty ideal, a dream, a possibility, a vision for the future, a vision that we're still fighting for today, the voice of people. Now, it didn't go as he hoped. Rome did devolve into a dictatorship. But we wouldn't be fighting against voter suppression today if he hadn't fought for the primacy of the voices of people way back then. So, as Rome was collapsing into authoritarianism, Cicero knew about taking a hit. He knew about getting knocked back. But he also knew how important gratitude is. If we want to get back up after we've taken a hit, listen to what he said about gratitude. Gratitude, he said, is not only the greatest of virtues, it is the parent of all the other virtues. Not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all the others. In other words, when we see not only the hit, but also the allies who stand with us when we take the hit, not only the resistance, but also the dream, not only the scary and the ugly, but also the true and the beautiful, that seeing, it changes us. It changes our brains even, we saw last week. It gives birth to the nobility that is inside of us. Gratitude enables us to keep on keeping on. It awakens a sustaining hope inside of us. It awakens all those other virtues. Now, there have been a whole bunch of studies on gratitude. One of them was at UC Davis several years ago, and it assigned three groups. For several months, the first made a list of all the stuff that bugged them every day. The second made a list of all the things that made them thankful every day, and the third just kept a running log of everything that happened. And yeah, what we've been talking about, it happened. Gratitude changes our brains. It does. The grateful group got happier. That makes sense. But they also had fewer headaches and fewer colds. They got sick less. They exercised more, an hour and a half each week more. They got more sleep. They had a baseline increase in their optimism and their determination and their endurance and their clear thinking. They drank less. They took fewer aspirins. They connected more. They went out on a limb on behalf of someone else more often. They became more understanding, more compassionate. If they were religious, their religion became more helpful and more meaningful to them. What do you know? Listen to old Cicero. Gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, it is also the parent of all the other virtues. Now, our ancient texts, they didn't know about double-blind studies, and they didn't know about control groups, but they did know, yeah, do this thing. In fact, stir yourself up to do this thing. And they got all insistent because they knew, like we do, that stirring up gratitude is a chore. To do it, we have to push against an evolutionary survival mechanism, negativity bias. If we see nine good things and we see one bad thing, our brains tend to zero in on the bad thing, which makes sense from a survival perspective because that one bad thing, it might kill us. So, if we get killed, game over for the gene passing game. So we've got in our heads a negativity bias. It's in us. That means if we want to get the whole picture, if we want to also see the positive and the true and the beautiful, we're going to have to stir up. We're going to have to be insistent of ourselves. We're going to have to push back on an onboard brain bias if we want to see the whole picture, if we want to know the whole story. That doesn't just happen. We have to resist for it to happen. We have to do something different from the path of least resistance in order to get the whole picture. So today, a couple practical tips on doing something different, on pushing back against our onboard brain bias. You heard in the announcements, I started this Examined Facebook group. I started because I noticed that I had been living unconsciously. Now, I know what living more consciously feels like because I've done it. Part of me is able to live the day and have another part of me stand back and observe myself living the day. I know I could do it. The problem was I hadn't been doing it. So when that happens and I realize that it's happened, I know what to do, time to pick up, examine again. Now I might should have picked it up earlier, oh well, but I'm back at it. Now since it doesn't do for me to spout all this stuff and not live it, and since one of the things that I spout all the time is that we find the divine better together than we do alone, I started looking for people to do the practice with. And it's going really well, and I hope you'll join. Last week, Cindy told me that there were some folks in the group that were new to the practice, and they could use an example of how I do it. So I joined the Thursday Zoom, and I shared how I do the practice. Later, after we had that Zoom, and I was thinking about it, I noticed something. It was kind of a back door that I hadn't seen into gratitude. Huh, look at that. So I thought I'd share that with you today. And to do it, I have to first explain how I do the practice examine of consciousness, this self-examination practice. What I do is I take 10 minutes before I leave my office. It's a way to trick my brain. If I make it a separate thing at a separate time, then somehow in my head it just gets too big and I think, and I just don't do it. But I've got a little treadmill desk that I work on during the day. If I just step off the treadmill, if I sit down in my chair and I open up the laptop to a window that's always open, and if I spend 10 minutes, it doesn't seem like that big a thing, so I actually do it. I shoot for 6 days a week. I always hit four. And since the group started, I'm trying my best to do five. So this is the window that I always have open. And so when I open up the laptop lid, the first tab is my examine log. That's where I put those questions, the questions that is examined. I put it there at the top of the page so I can just copy and paste them down into the day. Well, the next tabs help me remember my day. I've got another tab that's open. It's a virtue document, and then I've got my calendar open, and then I've got my sent emails, and then I've got my text messages, and I've got my recent documents folder. And so what I do is I look through those things for a few minutes at the end of my work to try and think back over what I did during the day. What did I work on? Who did I email? Who did I text? What was I thinking about? What was going on in my mind and my heart? What were my feelings as I was doing that? I recall the conversations that I had, and this one stands out, and I write it down. This is something I worked on, and I write it down. I did that. What I'm doing is I'm registering the moments of my days, moments that so often just fly by unseen or unobserved. Now remember, we're talking about gratitude, and I'm going to get to it. We're coming in a minute. Hold on. And then I do what we've been doing when we do examine as a practice on Sundays. I create a bullet point list of all those moments that I've lived by checking in with my calendar and my sent emails and my documents and my texts. I remember what I did. Now, I was preparing today's lesson on Thursday, so this is my Wednesday log. And on Wednesday, I did this, and I thought this, and I felt that, and I said these words. I got this list, again, by looking at the calendar, the documents, the emails. It's a simple bullet point list remembering my moments. It is a human tendency to not see, to not reflect on, but just to go on to the next part of our days and not remember or observe or think about what we've just done. So here's the next slide. And so when I've made that bullet point list, then I go over to this virtue list. And after I've jotted a few bullet points, I read through a few virtues that I found. I found this list online. And the reason I do that is to help bump me out of my typical thinking patterns. I don't read the whole list every day, but I'll read several of the words every day. I tend to, as we all do, I tend to think in the same patterns that I've thought before. I would never tend to think to assess my days through the lens of orderliness. That just never comes into my head. Neither would I tend to examine my days through the lens of respect or loyalty. But it turns out that orderliness and respect and loyalty, these are very important parts of life. They're just not in my thinking pattern radar. So I read some virtue words, ways that we live when we tap into the inner light, when we are our best selves. And then I, back to this daily log, and then I copy and paste those bullet points and I put them down into the self-examination section. And that's where I write some other words beside them. Now, because I've read over the virtues, I'm thinking about my day differently. And given our brain's negativity bias, it's easy for us to see when we do this practice all the places where we were not our best selves, where we were not in tune with the interior divine. That's the default setting. But it turns out, I do respect people all the time. And it turns out, I am loyal all the time. And a lot of the time, I live an orderly life. I'm gracious all the time. Well, would you look at that? It turns out when I take a more granular look at my days, and when I do so through the lens of this ancient wisdom about how human beings live when they tap into the divine, even with all of this omni-ugliness that is going on in our world right now, I interact with a lot of people, and I am respectful, and you know what? They are too. I spend a lot of time with people who are respectful and who are orderly and who are loyal and who are supportive and who are gifted and who are kind. Now get ready, we're getting close to the gratitude part. And because my brain with its negativity bias tends to filter those things out, by doing this more granular practice, I get to see that, yes, there is a whole bunch of ugly out there and there's a whole bunch of scary going on. There is. But there's also a lot of loving going on. There's also a lot of beauty going on. And if I can get past my brain's negativity bias that filters that stuff out, and if I can see the true and the beautiful that are there too, I become much more resilient. I become much more capable of taking a hit and snapping back. But it requires, as Jesus said, eyes that see. And we don't always have eyes that see what is true and beautiful and good. So 10 minutes before I leave the office, that's a pretty small price to pay to get eyes that see. And so, may I encourage you again to contemplative practice. We do 4 core practices together. There are many more, but we focus on mindfulness meditation, examine of consciousness, the welcome prayer for our afflictive moments, and the loving kindness meditation. And in my life, I cycle through them. I hope you will too. Right now, obviously, I'm focused on examine, and I hope you'll join me. But finally, I wanted to share this thing that happened while I was sharing with the examined group on that Zoom what my practice looked like. So as I went through my documents, somebody noticed that having looked over my interactions with Matt and with Julie and with Christy that day, I was grateful. I wrote that down. So they asked me, now about that, Doug, did you write that down at the end of the day, or do you ever get around to telling those people about your gratitude for them? It was a really good question. I read a quote this week, feeling gratitude and not expressing it is like wrapping a present and not giving it. And so I made a point to go back over my last few days and tell a few people I appreciate why I appreciate them. It's more powerful too than it sounds, gratitude. And again, I hope you'll join me. I hope you will examine your days. And maybe this Thanksgiving week, I hope you'll tell someone. Tell someone why you're grateful for them. Maybe you could write a letter. Make a phone call. At least send a text. Maybe you would take a few notes before you do to get yourself ready so you could be specific and think through what you're grateful for. And then tell them what it is about them that you appreciate. Well, may we be more alert to the inner light. And may we have eyes that see more clearly. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. And by that we mean, would you go to our website? Because we are all online donators now, or else we're not donating. You hear me say it all the time, that spiritual community is a great place to invest. It has a great return on investment. And I know that that's true of our spiritual community. That when we give our time and our energy and our love, our support, and the dollars that it takes to be healthy, there is something that accrues to us by being part of a healthy, thriving community. So if you get to keep your job, please do keep donating through the pandemic. And If you didn't get to keep your job, you've heard Scott say several times, we want to stand together with that. So please don't go through this alone. Please let somebody know. You can use the Contact Us button. Well, eventually that'll get to Scott. He's got a whole team figuring out how to help one another get resources during this time. And that being said, Gene, what are folks thinking? What is stirring up in people's hearts?
So Ann Scioli started out towards the beginning and said, I wonder what a media outlet inspired by this fight our brains bias perspective would look like. Bob Love had a comment to that, which said it would probably look like one with very low viewership. They've already figured out how to get folks to watch.
I kind of thought it would look like... Hold on just a minute, Bob. When we think about movies that ignite something in us because the actions are heroic and the actions are noble and virtuous and good, that gets high viewership. You know, I think, you know, Les Miserables ran for, 25 years on Broadway. Then they made a movie out of it. They did all this stuff. It's a story of someone facing hardship and being noble and good in the midst of it. It's a story of redemption. These things are also significant parts of our human wiring. But something happened in the 20th century, I don't know exactly when, where we began to think of that as more trivial, and we began to think of angst as more serious. And the thing is, up to that point, we've been kind of turning a blind eye to angst. We'd turned a blind eye to alienation. We'd turned a blind eye to the painfulness of the human condition. And so, at that point, we were living, as pendulums tend to swing, out of balance, and we swung to not balance, but counterbalance. And it might be important for us to move to counterbalance. And, you know, I can't imagine a news channel, but I can imagine, you know, a Netflix stream in which there's a lot of noble stories. Anyway, what do you think about?
So Claire Cooper says, I consider
seeing... By the way, I met Claire Cooper this week. Claire, it's nice to see you here.
So Claire said...
Sorry to interrupt you.
Hang on. Yeah, you did. It's okay. And now it's disappeared. Hang on for a minute. Let me go find it.
Well, Claire, hello. Sorry we lost your comment in the stream.
There we go. Claire said, I consider seeing love in the midst of terror... hope.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because in terror, you will always find someone sacrificing on behalf of someone else. You will always find the tend and befriend instinct. It's there, and it is true, and it is beautiful.
So Tony Everett says, this talk reminds me of a comment Michelle Carter made during a What Are You Still Thinking session. She said, we're becoming the very thing we loathe during these trying times. Paraphrasing, of course. How true.
We're becoming the very thing we loathe. Now, this is secondhand, so I'm just trying to wonder, I'm wondering what Michelle was saying in that. So we are becoming the very thing that we loathe. Okay, maybe it's this.
I think it's the judging, yeah, you know, we're otherizing, you know.
When we otherize the otherizers, yeah, that's a thing. What else?
Let's see. Angie says, I'm seeing that examine is not really about self-improvement, that was my assumption, but about seeing what is right in front of you but not being attended to.
Yeah, that is exactly right. So, you know, just the lesson wasn't about examine. The lesson was about stumbling into a backdoor way of finding our way into gratitude. But let's talk about examine for a moment. What I have found by looking at my days and observing my days, I had two big things that kept recurring day after day after day for the first 3 weeks. One had to do with the way that I relate in one of my relationships, and the other had to do with how unobservant I am of my days. My days just go flying by, and how rarely I am living in that capacity to live my day but also stand outside of my day and observe myself living it. And that one is still a struggle. You know, I mean, I know how to do it. I've done it before, but the habit got, I got so out of the habit that it's hard to find my way back in. And then there's stupid practical things like how I used to use a little chime on my watch, but then that changed how I relate to the chimes and what's going on. A whole bunch of practical things. But it just takes time. And what I find is that then on a day, a little bit of the thing happens. And then I find at the end of the day, I noticed that on the day, a little bit of the thing happened. And then I notice that I catch myself getting out of the one mode that I've been living in. And three times in one day, I caught myself doing it. And it's an incremental transformation that happens simply through observation, simply by intentionally observing and seeing our lives. It's a powerful practice. Come join us. All right, one more.
So, Christy Phillips says, I used Virtue List this week and was surprised at how many positive things I could find in experiences I thought were bad or ugly.
There you go. That's a great place to end. Thank you, Christy. All right, if you would, please put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we all carry the indwelling divine. Love and joy and peace and kindness and goodness, they are in us because the breath is in us. And if you would, extend your other hand to our city. And let's look for opportunities during the course of this holiday week to share what is in us, the true and the good and the beautiful, with those that we live and work, go to school with, those that we are going to share the holiday with, looking for opportunities to share what is in us and looking for chances to repair and heal our world. Amen. God bless you. We are dismissed. Love one another and head on over to the Zoom and talk about what you're thinking. I'll see you again next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.